They have, in theory, have said that hopefully it shouldn't return, but all it takes, as they told us before, is one cell just starts growing again, and that's it. So if he says he has a headache, yes, you're automatically starting to worry. Is this the signs of it starting to grow again?
A spokesperson for the Belfast Trust said it was keen to reassure Ewan's parents it had followed the recommended intervals for follow-up scans, which normally take place on a 12 to 24 monthly basis. The spokesperson said the family and Ewan's GP would be contacted about an MRI scan in a matter of days. Finally, onto the weather forecast, mostly cloudy with patchy rain becoming heavier and more persistent from the west later this morning, wet for much of the afternoon with a blustery wind and temperatures of 8 or 9 Celsius. BBC News.
Live from the BBC, the biggest radio show in the country, Nolan is on air now.
On Nolan this morning, a prison officer speaks out. On this show, he claims McGabbery is understaffed, in chaos, and awash with drugs. The row over the Lord's Prayer ban at the cinema. Would you have a problem with a big screen ad featuring that prayer? And are police spending too much time and money on historical abuse investigations? Here's the number today with 0303 80 55 55 is the number to call. The text 81771 at Stephen Nolan on Twitter.
The biggest show in the country.
The most dangerous prison we've ever seen. That was the damning assessment from Her Majesty's Chief Inspector of Prisons in England and Wales into Northern Ireland's high security McGabbery Prison. Inspectors visited McGabbery in May and found it in a state of crisis. They found it was unsafe and unstable for prisoners and staff. The report is one of the most critical of any prison in the UK. But days later, the man in charge of McGabbery said he was confident he could address the serious concerns raised in the report. Phil Reig was appointed governor in August, 3 months after the inspection was carried out. He told the BBC that significant improvements have already been made. But the Nolan Show has been told a completely different story. Our reporter Nicola Weir has spoken to a serving prison officer at McGabbery. He says the jail is organised chaos. He says that prisoners are openly taking drugs, and he says that they are essentially running the prison. An actor has voiced up the prison officer's words to protect his identity.
If you listen to the DG and our new governor, everything's been fixed. They've had a bad report back in May, but now everything's fixed. In May we were working with two men on a landing, and yesterday and today we're still working with two men on a landing.
And what does that entail when you say there's two men on a landing? How many men or prisoners are you looking after?
There could be up to, on the landing I was working on yesterday, there were 48. That's now two men have to do the job, so it used to be five men. Used to be five men in each one of these landings. And they wouldn't have opened the door beforehand. Their plan always was to have a better turnover of staff so that pension contributions would be less. The problem is that when they first brought all this programme for change in, they got rid of 580 members of staff and replaced them with 340. From those 340, I would say at least half of them have left, but there's been no new bodies in, and it's been going downhill and downhill, downhill, downhill. Now, in any other business field, if you don't have the staff to do the job, you recruit, and you see you're losing staff, so you put your recruiting in first. For the last 6 months, the DG has been saying they're transferring people here, there and everywhere, and they're bringing people back off the sick. The people that have been coming back off the sick haven't been going into frontline posts. They've been going into non-prisoner contact posts, so it's not relieving any of the pressure on the staff that are on the landings who are facing threats of violence. And it's the actual staff on the landings that are getting hit the hardest.
What does it feel like as a prison officer going in there day and daily? What do you experience when you go onto the block?
When you actually go into the block, there's a small lull before you open your first door. And from you open your first door till lunchtime lockup, it's just bedlam. It's organised chaos because if you don't have the staff, there's the phone. The phone in your office will never stop. So someone has to sit there to continually answer for phone calls, for queries and for all the requests and stuff that prisoners make, which means there's one person running up and down the landings. So this two man, the people on the landing, there's one person on the landing at a time because the other person is continually tied up in the office and only glance up and down. Now, I'm not a shrinking valet, but it's frightening when you can get a threat threatened to be assaulted every day you go into work. There's threats of, you know, I'm going to knock your melt in. You just go irate dead on. But when there's a day in, day out, and then I've been assaulted, and that's assaults directly, successful assaults. I've had to put my hands on prisoners and actually restrain them countless times. It's the violence in that place is just off the scale towards prisoners. There's prisoners that don't go to the yards, that don't take any exercise for maybe 6-8 months at a time because they're frightened to go into the yards. We don't have the manpower to go into the yards if something goes on. If there's a fight in the yards, they have to stand at the grills and hope that whoever's in there doesn't kill them. Because by the time it takes the reaction teams to get in there, they could have killed two or three times over.
And you were saying there's two people on that landing. One of them is tied up with phones and other administration. Does that mean that when you start work and you open up the cell doors, that there are prisoners, 48 prisoners out there, that one person is having to deal with?
We restrict movements because we're the ones with the keys. We have to try to restrict movements. But because of the pressures from above to get more and more prisoners out in daily routines, something as simple. So there's 12 what we call orderlies on one landing. So the only thing the orderlies get, they don't get an extra payment. They don't get anything like this here. The only thing the orderlies get is unlocked the full of the working day. They're locked for their lunchtime. They're locked in for their tea time. The rest of the day, that's the only treat the orderlies get. So that's their bonus for doing the work.
And what is an orderly?
An orderly would be, a landing orderly would be responsible for cleaning the landings. Ablutions orderlies would be responsible for cleaning ablutions. We have orderlies for cleaning yards, just basically doing the tasks around the jail. All right, we have about 40 or 50 different types of orderly. Like I say, their only treat, the only thing they get out of being an orderly is the fact that they're out of the cell. But by the time you unlock all your orderlies that are on your landing, that's 12 men out. And then you have to unlock anybody that needs to prepare for their day's work. So that could be another 12 men out. So you could have 24 men with one man trying to run around and you can't see everything. So the drugs is going through the roof. They're saying that we're getting on top of the drugs because they're finding more drugs. We're only finding more drugs because the place is awash with them. We have prisoners openly snorting drugs in the rec rooms, openly smoking drugs in the rec rooms, and we can do nothing about it because of the staffing levels.
And why can you do nothing about it? What restrains you from going in there and trying to sort that out?
You could have anything up to 100 prisoners in that yard at a time and 6 members of staff. And if those prisoners, they're not searched going out into it because we don't have the manpower to search the prisoners going into the yard. So we don't know if they're carrying shanks, weapons, drugs. They just carry them out into the yard and they come back. The only reason McGabry is still standing is because the prisoners are being compliant. That's it. That's the only reason McGabry is still there today. We have staff that are leaving in droves because they can't take the threats.
And what do you make of the report that came out? And it was a bad report in May, and we've been hearing from them things have changed. It's a completely different regime. You know, this is not the way it is now.
Well, I would say to them that, yes, they might have wrote their plans. You can make all the plans you want. There's not the manpower there to actually to do anything. We're on our knees. The service is on its knees and nobody seems to be pushing for more staff. They're all pushing for new buildings and they're all pushing for this and they're pushing for that. But nobody's saying, listen, we physically need the staff. They've started a recruitment process and this recruitment process was called for 2 years ago. So it's finally started. Now, they'll say they tried to recruit last year, but they tried to recruit under false pretenses. Because they were recruiting for the courts group, not for the actual jail. They're now saying they're recruiting for the jail, and that's a year. So it's going to take a year to get boots onto the landings. And what's going to happen in that year? That's another summer with no boots on the landings. That's another summer where staff are getting assaulted day in, day out, 6 and 7 hours a day.
What's it like being a prison officer in McGabry at the moment?
Frightening. Honestly, it's frightening. I can't tell my partner how I feel because she thinks everything's all right and I'm bringing home the bacon and I'm making, it's, everybody thinks we make huge money. The new CPOs, you can earn more in Tesco's, you know. But the fear of dread walking onto the landings, it's hard to explain, but when every time you see someone with a cup of tea, you think that cup of tea's coming around me. When every time you open a door, you think, am I going to get stabbed or am I going to get hit with something coming out of here? Where there's prisoners making false accusations day in, day out. And I've never been in trouble with the police and I've never been questioned by the police until I went into the prison service. And automatically somebody's, you know, my integrity's questioned day in, day out. It just takes that and I'm for the high road. For the sake of being, They say they're dealing with it robustly. And yes, there are those that take the hand in any firm. But when people are getting sacked and people are getting sick warnings for being assaulted on duty, people are getting sick warnings and sacked for being assaulted on duty, you know, it's just beyond a joke.
And from all the years that you've been there, and we're not specifically going to say how long you've worked there, have things got progressively worse? Have they got any better? Are things being tackled?
Due to the staffing levels. It's the last 2 years has just taken a swan dive off a cliff. And you can see they'll keep... We were told the vibe was good. Nobody asked us what the vibe was. We were told the vibe was good in a staff meeting not so long ago and that things were getting better. But not one person that works in those landings believes that. Not one.
And you were saying that McGabbery, as far as you're concerned, is still standing because the prisoners are being compliant. Are you kind of saying that the prisoners are running the jail?
As a general rule, yes. If the prisoners don't want us to do something, they'll make that awkward. We can't do it. You know, the only thing keeping the lid on at the minute is the amount of drugs. It's horrendous. And
what kind of drugs are you saying day and daily?
Day and daily? Heroin, cocaine, diazepam, pregabalin. It's that a wash. I've been walking up a corridor at times and found tablets lying on the floor, quite literally, just tablets lying on the floor.
And how are they getting them in?
The prescription meds are coming in through the health service 99 times out of 100. The rest of them, we've got a term called their jail suitcase. So when prisoners, there's actually people go out to get locked up when people go on home leave or people go on CTRs. They come in and they're, what's technically termed their suitcase, they can shove their stuff up their backside. And it's amazing what some of them can get up their backsides.
What's a CTR?
A compassionate temporary release. They get, if a family member or something died or whatever, they would go out. If they're unaccompanied, you can guarantee they're bringing stuff in.
And are they not checked whenever they come back in?
They are, but they're given a full body search, which in the old days would have been called a strip search, but it's not. At no point are they naked. I mean, we can't do body cavity searches. We can't x-ray. So although we can search, we can't full body them.
And is the reason you can't do x-rays and things like that there, is it money? Is it lack of staffing?
That's down to management. I don't think we're allowed to x-ray them just for a safety point of view. But there's no technology there that'll pick up as well as full body searching. The dissident Republicans don't want us to fully body search them. They want a machine in. But the reason behind that, because they know the machines aren't as good as a full body search. But at the same time, we can't do a cavity search.
So what do you say to Minister Ford, who is saying things are getting better, things are looking up? What do you say as someone who is walking those cells and getting the abuse you're getting?
Come put a white shirt on and spend 2 or 3 days in the landings. Not in a suit where everybody will be nice to you because they think they can get something from you. But say no to a prisoner. Tell him he can't have something because you can't physically do it for him. Explain to him why he hasn't got mail in 5 days because the letter centres have been closed down because of staff shortages. Come and try the job. It's not getting any better. It's getting worse. It's getting more frightening. And what's it going to take? Somebody's going to have to die before they do something. It's already happened in England, where officers died in England. We're getting officers assaulted every day.
And what makes you get up every morning and do your job?
I was going to say something there. I'm a prat. I have a sense of responsibility. These people are put in jail not because they're nice people. They're put in jail to protect the public, and someone has to be there to do it. The unfortunate thing is that I dip my toe in the water. I'm now a target the rest of my life. Driving in and out of the jail, I'm at threat. I'm at threat when I'm in jail. I'm at threat when I'm out of jail. Are you sitting talking to me now? There's nothing to say that somebody wouldn't walk up here and shoot a pair of us. I can. I've been harassed outside work in shopping centres with my family because there's a screw there. There's that screw there. You know, Mr. Ford needs to take a long, hard look at who he's employing to run the prison service. And the managers in the prison service need to take a long, hard look at how they're running it. Because from the bottom up, it's not a pretty sight.
Well, very, very strong testimony there from that prison officer who was speaking to our reporter Nicola Weir. Listening to that, the DUP Justice Committee member, Edwin Poots. What do you make of that, Edwin?
Well, it's pretty powerful. But not surprising for those of us who are following closely what's going on in the prisons, and no surprise for David Ford this morning either, because the Independent Monitoring Board, which reports every year, has been indicating that there's been problems with staffing, problems with overcrowding, problems with drugs. So whilst the public may not be fully aware of this, the Minister, the Department, the Director General have all been very well aware of what's going on in the prisons and have ignored the warnings. The Prisoner Governors Association approached...
Well, they haven't ignored the warnings, have they? They say that they're dealing with the warnings.
No, they're not dealing with that. That's the problem. The Prison Governor approached the Director General of the Department back in 2014 to seek more prison officers. At that stage, they were 41 down in the Gabre. They were told there'd be they were told that in the autumn time they would go to recruitment. In the autumn time, there were 60 prison officers down, and they were told that the recruitment would start after Christmas. And then by the spring of 2015, they were down over 80 prison officers, and the recruitment still hadn't started at that point. By the time we got to the critical report in 2015, June 2015, because of the lack of recruitment and because of staff sickness, many of them off and stress as a result of overwork, there were 200 people down at the time of the critical report.
Yeah, and if you listen to that prison officer who spoke to Nicola this morning, he claims that there are two men working to a landing looking after 48 prisoners. That means two men doing the job of five men due to staff shortages. He calls it organised chaos. And essentially says the prisoners are running the prison. Like, does this echo what you're hearing?
Absolutely. It creates an unsafe environment both for the prisoners and the prison staff. And that is no way that a prison should be run.
Prisoners openly taking drugs? That's what he claims?
Around close to 80% of prisoners are taking drugs in McGabry Prison at this point in time.
Where are you getting that from?
That is a fact. Whenever I was in the Department of Health, we were aware of the amount of prescription drugs that was being used. And it is just incredible. Many of these people enter prison with considerable problems, and many of them are taking prescription drugs, large quantities of it, before they go to prison. So the prison is awash with prescription drugs before you start. And then there are many illegal drugs being imported into the prison as well.
It's shocking in itself that you're not surprised by what you've heard this morning.
No, I'm not the least bit surprised.
Organised chaos in one of our main prisoners. Prisoners essentially running it. Prisoners openly taking drugs.
In terms of how the prison has been run, we have had two people scapegoated for the negative report. This problem goes right to the Director General of the Prison Service and indeed the Minister of Justice. Over the last year alone, I asked the question at the last Justice Committee of how many people have been medically retired over the course of the last 3 years. It was something like 16 and 18 in the previous 2 years, and then this last year, 57 prison officers have been medically retired. Now, you consider the cadre of the workforce that exists there, and the numbers that are involved in that. 57 medically retired out of that workforce is a huge volume of individuals. Most of it is stress-related. I'm also informed that much of the work that is done by the Occupational Health Service in terms of prison officers coming back to work, much of that work is being ignored, and prison officers are actually being forced back to work. And I am aware of one individual who is self-harming as a consequence of being forced back into a situation that they are neither physically or mentally ready to go back to.
You're aware of a prison officer who is self-harming?
Self-harming.
And that prison officer is back in work?
Yes.
And is self-harming at home?
Yes. I can't go into that too far, Stephen, as you'd appreciate.
Of course you can't. But that in itself is very serious.
It is very serious in that the prison service has a duty of care to its staff, and that duty of care I do not believe is being adhered to, and consequently those staff are being put under undue stress, undue pressure. They're being put we cannot give the prisoners that assurance, but we cannot either give the prison officers that assurance. I had prison officers with me and quite recently, two of them were put into extremely vulnerable situations where their lives could have been lost had it been the choice of others to do that.
You can let us know what you think at home this morning, 030 30 80 55 55. So according to that prison officer, that's the state of the prison, McGabbery, at the moment. Edwin Poots, as you're hearing, he says he's not surprised. He's heard similar things. And he's claimed this morning that there's a prison officer, a serving prison officer, self-harming because of the stress of what he's going having to go through inside that prison. We did ask David Ford to come on the programme today. He won't do so. There is a statement here from the prison service. CJI and I raised a number of serious issues in the report following the unannounced inspection in May. These were widely reported, says the prison service, and the minister, along with NIPS senior management, have responded both in the Assembly, the Justice Committee and the media. NIPS has published the actions that will address all the recommendations from the report and is confident that when the inspectors return in January, they will see significant improvement and a safer prison at McGabbery. Well, I'll tell you what, this prison officer who's spoken to Nolan this morning, at the Nolan Show this morning, certainly has big, big concerns, Justice Minister. So what on earth is going on? Edwin, emotional day on Saturday before you go. Your leader saying his farewell.
Yeah, it was a great day. And
a great day, was it?
It was a great day, yes. Peter has made his decision that after giving over 45 years of his life to the Democratic Unionist Party and to politics, that he wishes to retire, and he got a tremendous send-off.
Are you glad to see him go?
I'm glad that Peter has been able to give the service that he has given, and that he has been able to deliver so much for the people of Northern Ireland over the course of his career in politics.
Did you want him to stay on, Edwin?
I'm delighted in particular that he managed to skillfully negotiate such a good deal in the course of the last week. For the people of Northern Ireland, which will ensure that we will bring more employment to Northern Ireland through lower corporation tax, which will ensure that 100,000 families who would be hit with working family tax credit cuts, working families will now be able to ensure that their lifestyles are maintained. And I have a huge admiration for Peter, a huge respect for him, and I'm hugely grateful for everything that he's done and has achieved.
So just
he is very well entitled to enjoy his retirement.
So just to address my question, are you glad to see him go?
I'm glad that Peter has done everything for the country that he's been able to do, and I'm glad that he's been able to step back at a time when his career achieve something so successful, and that he is entitled to enjoy a healthy and a long retirement, and that's something that I truly hope that he has.
Did you want him to stay?
I was just chatting to my dad yesterday.
Were you?
And he was saying that he could remember going to a meeting in Banbridge close to 50 years ago, whenever Peter was 17 or 18. And he says, there is a young man that'll lead the country someday. He could recognise Peter's abilities even back then, and I think that we've been privileged to have someone who's been so able, articulate, strategic, and had the skills to lead for unionism.
You're glad he's gone, aren't you?
Over the years.
You're glad he's gone, aren't you?
You're trying to put words into my mouth.
I've asked you on a number of occasions.
I am absolutely delighted that Peter's been able to give the service.
I've asked you on a number of occasions, are you glad he's gone?
And
I've asked you on a number of occasions, did you want him to stay? You haven't answered either.
I would have been very happy if Peter had wished to continue, but Peter didn't wish to continue, and that's his choice, his right, and he has done something which most politicians are unsuccessful in doing. He has left the post at a time when things are going well.
Let's not talk about Peter anymore, because
things are positive.
Good luck to Peter in his retirement. If Nigel Dodds gets leader, are you going to go for deputy leader?
And all of these things, these are internal party matters, and we will deal with those internally.
Well, you must have thought about it, Edwin.
We will deal with all of these matters internally. I'm absolutely flattered, Stephen, this morning that you would even think of mentioning my name. There's lots of other names out there, and you're so kind this morning, and thank you for your kindness. You're not always as generous. You're not.
Deputy Pooch doesn't have a wee ring to it. You don't fancy the job, Edwin?
Oh, that would have a lovely ring to it, wouldn't it? Listen, Stephen, I have served the party in a whole series of positions over the years, and I'm happy to continue to do what I'm doing, and whatever the party want of me, I'll continue to serve it. But thank you for your indulgence this morning and your kindness nonetheless.
Indulge me just one more moment, because yesterday on the Sunday Politics Show, Mark Cruthers interviewed Peter Robinson at the DUP party conference, and he asked him this question. Have a listen to this.
Let's talk about the end of your political leadership for a moment or two. Your predecessor, Ian Paisley, felt he was pushed out at the end of his career, and he was very public about that a short time before his death. You say your decision to go has been your choice, but you must have known that if you didn't go, you would be pushed.
Well, that isn't the case. Indeed, all of the urging was for me to stay, and indeed part of the reason for my public announcement was to put it beyond the stage where it could be returned. No, I have had massive support within the party. I'm very grateful to all of my colleagues. There is no sense of being pushed whatsoever. Of course, every political party has a range of political views within it. There are people that, for personality and other reasons, will have a different view than I have. However, I'm happy to say they are in very small numbers and are not exactly in the most influential end of the party.
Would it surprise you to hear that I've spoken to several senior members of the party on this very subject in recent weeks, and one of them today who talked to me about the need for you to go was standing on the platform and hugged you at the end of that speech?
It doesn't surprise me, and you and I both know who it is. That's why I say that it is a small, very small group within the party, and happily one that didn't have a lot of influence.
Edwin, who was the hugger?
No idea.
You've no idea?
You'd have to ask Mark Cruthers.
You don't know?
No, I hadn't. That's the first I've heard that interview, and I've no idea.
You don't know who wanted Peter to go?
I have no idea who Mark Cruthers is referring to, so you'll have to ask Mark Cruthers.
I have no idea.
Wrong person to ask a question.
I have no idea who Mark Cruthers was referring to. Obviously, I have no idea who Mark Cruthers' source was. Do you think it was Ian Paisley Jr.?
I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea. As I say, it's the first I heard that interview, so Mark Cruthers is the man to reveal that source.
Well, you know Ian Paisley Jr. well. Did he want Peter to go?
I have no idea. You would have to ask Ian Jr. His opinion.
You've never spoken to Ian Paisley Jr. about wanting Peter to go?
I've given you my opinion this morning, Steve.
It's never come up in a conversation with you?
And what we have heard is a very accurate reflection in that Peter Robinson was pushed out. He has decided to retire, and he is very well entitled to make that decision. He was encouraged to stay on. He chose not to do that, and he's entitled now to have a healthy and enjoyable... And I'll tell you something. Whoever has responsibility for the party, I would like, at critical points in the future, to be able to lift the phone to Peter Robinson and ask his advice, because he has a brilliant political mind, a good strategic thinker, and I think he has still much to give us. Albeit it'll be on the basis of being asked for his opinion in the future as opposed to him meeting.
Going to have to look at everybody who hugged him now, see who it was.